is the intro. Lady MJ, Crip Hop's taking over the show. Universal collaboration, disability rock the nation. Universal collaboration, disability rock the nation. Universal collaboration, disability rock the nation.
Hi, I'm Helen Gwilliam, and I'd like to welcome you to 3CR's all-day broadcast celebrating International Day of People with a Disability. We've got 12 hours of social justice radio for you through until 6:30 this evening by, for and about people with disability. We've got fantastic shows from City Limits, Brainwaves, Small Talk, Radical Australia, Refugee Radio, as well as live music with Are You Looking At Me this afternoon. Look at our website 3cr.org.au for all the details, or just keep listening all day. First up, a Disability Day edition of Earth Matters. Welcome to Earth Matters, stories of environmental and social justice, produced in the studios of 3CR Radio in Fitzroy, Victoria, and broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network. This week on Earth Matters, we're celebrating International Day of People with a Disability, which is on the 3rd of December each year. There are people with disability all around the world, working and volunteering to protect the environment. But there's also a need for better access to parks and reserves, so that everyone can learn about and enjoy the natural world, and for environmental employment and volunteering to be more inclusive of people with disability. Birding for All is an organisation in the UK working to improve access to birdwatching reserves for people with disability. It's a relatively young organisation, but since being set up in the year 2000, it's grown into an international network with over 750 members. As the name Birding for All suggests, the organisation believes inclusive access to natural areas will improve access for everyone, not only for people with disability. I spoke to Beau Bolans, founder and chairman of Birding for All. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Beau. And can I start by asking you, can you tell us about Birding for All? When was the organisation started and what was its purpose?
Well, we started in 2001. And I guess the first motivation was quite selfish. I have some mobility issues and I'm what I call hard of walking. So I was looking to find better access for people like myself, I guess, to start with. And very quickly I made contact with other people with quite different issues to mine. And we set about setting up something which would lobby for better provision, looking for barrier-free access to anyone with any sort of mobility issue. First few people that got involved were actually wheelchair users, but the vast majority of people, either able-bodied, oddly enough, just wanted to help, or had all sorts of conditions from just having had an accident through to chronic arthritis, etc., etc. So that's what it was all about.
So once you got a few people together, what were some of the barriers you were seeing? Why did you see the need for an association or a group of you dedicated to inclusive access to bird watching?
I guess there were two issues. One is the sort of purely physical one, and that is that reserves, I guess, are by and large created by fit young men, and things are designed around their needs, not because they are deliberately just being selfish, but because they just don't see beyond that. So the average hide or path or entry was fine for them, but didn't necessarily fit everybody. So you have gates where you didn't need them, you know, maybe to keep cattle in, where you could have used the cattle grid instead, that sort of thing. Or you'd have steps up to a hide rather than a ramp, great distances to walk with no way of resting in between, that sort of thing. That was the first thing. And the second thing is the sort of psychological one, really, and that is that over here, there are places you can bird on a reserve and have vehicular access if you have a disability. But if you get in your car and drive into one, the looks you get from people are so intimidating that you won't do it. And I knew lots of people who struggled rather than take that easy route because they were just, I guess, intimidated into not doing so. And I thought that's another barrier that isn't necessarily a physical one that needs to be taken into account.
Good universal access to birdwatching sites or to public, what we'd call in Australia, public lands, it's not all about wheelchair access, is it?
Absolutely not, no. Over here anyway, and I guess it's probably true around the world, something like 0.1% of disabled people are wheelchair users. And yet most provision makes the assumption that all disabled people are wheelchair users, and if you make it right for wheels, you make it right for everybody. Well, there's a lot you can do that for people in wheelchairs that does help a lot of other people, but things like distance travelled and so on doesn't actually take that into account at all. And the difference between being self-propelled and being pushed is not something that, that people without a disability necessarily get their head round. People that, that are confined to a wheelchair want to be as independent as they can. We all do. They don't want to have to be pushed somewhere. They want to get there under their own steam. And again, distances can be a problem in that way as well. I guess that it's not, well, it's not rocket surgery, as I will say, that things that get in the way that don't need to be there, that's the first one, barrier-free access. Second thing is to look at what those barriers are and say, why are they there? If you've got, as I say, a gate, you could have a cattle grid maybe. If you're trying to keep out motorcyclists, for example, then and you put a kissing gate in, then you can design one which will work for a wheelchair and not just for people, and yet will exclude groups you don't want to exclude. So those things need to be thought through a lot. Then when it comes to actual provision like hides and so forth, then you've got to look at things that fit everyone or at least give all those different people an opportunity. And again, the analogy I always use is imagine if all shoes were actually size 10 black boots and you then had to adapt them to fit, I don't know, somebody wants a size 6 pink stiletto, it would cost a lot of money. But if you set out to do different things for different people from the outset, it's only a design that you have to worry about, not actually cost. Whereas most people who provide reserves and so on look at it as an issue right at the end when everything else is done, and then it does get costly because you've got to take down those barriers, you've got to put in different surfaces, etc., etc. Whereas if you think it through from the beginning, design around it, always, of course, bearing in mind that you don't want to do anything that harms wildlife or detracts from a conservation, then, you know, then it's relatively easy to do.
So you mentioned there that obviously you're interested in birds and birdwatching, and you're not looking for any modifications to visitor facilities that would affect the wildlife. How do you strike that balance?
Well, as I said, I think that you have to go right back to the drawing board in a way and look at why are there preserves and reserves. Well, okay, in some places at some times that actual bit of habitat is so unique, so important to wildlife that it has to be preserved. But actually, most of conservation is about changing our way of doing things so that we don't impact on the environment in bad ways. And you're not going to save the birds in a small country like the UK by having a few acres here and a few acres there. You have to change the way we farm, how we build, what we do with flood defences and so on and so on. So those reserves actually are more or less there for people to get educated, enjoy wildlife. It's about getting people to wildlife for all sorts of reasons, rather than actually about that preservation. Okay, even then, you've got to do things that actually make it work for the birds or for the whatever animals you're trying to help or plants or whatever. But almost everything you can do in that way, if you're going to have any visitors at all, then you've got to do it right for everybody. Otherwise, I just think it's elitist if you only allow in a certain sort of people. You know, we'd get really annoyed if you only let men in, no women. So we should get just as annoyed if we don't let people in that have got some sort of physical issue. Again, it's a whole thing about disability. Disability is not a problem for an individual. It's a problem that society creates for that individual by not taking into account that we all have different needs.
You're listening to Earth Matters on the Community Radio Network with me, Helen Gwilliam. This week's show is celebrating International Day of People with a Disability on the 3rd of December. And I'm speaking to Bo Bolans of Birding for All, a UK-based organisation that advocates for improved access to nature reserves for people with disability.
Sometimes proposals to create universal access visitor facilities, particularly in natural areas, can lead to community concern. I find it a bit irritating because often you're talking about quite high visitation sites, but as soon as you talk about universal access, people accuse you of wanting to, you know, tarmac the wilderness. How do you respond to those kind of concerns?
I think the lesson, actually, this is a good one you're talking to me, because you have to take into account the different experiences around the world. If you look, for example, at a reserve in somewhere in East Africa, which is full of lions and whatever. They don't let people in by themselves. You can only go in a vehicle. Otherwise, you might get eaten. In other places, it's seen vehicles are seen as some sort of, you know, absolute no-go area. Whereas, in fact, they're often mobile hides. I mean, I use one all the time in my birding, just, you know, every day in the countryside. And a dog walker is going to disturb far more birds than me driving along in my car. People let their dogs out on the beach and chase away all the waders. I'd never do that. So you have to look at those different cases and say, okay, what is the actual impact of what you're going to do here? You know, and okay, I'm not advocating tarmac if left, right, and centre and concrete bunkers and all the rest of it. Yes, you should always try to build anything in an environmentally friendly way. But if you're going to have access for people, then it has to be all people, not just some people. And if there are compromises you need to make there in terms of surfaces or facilities in other ways, then you have to make them or you don't allow people in at all. It's as simple as that.
So since you founded Birding for All, have you noticed changes in access to birding in the UK or people's awareness of the needs of visitors with disability?
Short answer is definitely. We're lucky. I mean, I happen to know over the years and got to know quite well the CEO of the ISPB. Now, that's a 1 million person organisation. I think it's the biggest membership conservation organisation in the world. Okay, they've got a lot of land in their control, but they're also quite a big lobby group. Now, when I first went to the British Bird Fair, which has about 20-odd, 25,000 visitors each year, I used to go cap in hand to anybody I could see there and say, you know, can you help? And when I first went there, I asked to meet the CEO, and they sent along somebody else. Eventually, after a couple of years, the guy they sent along was a rising star who's now the CEO. I used to go to them and say, you know, what can you do for us? Now, every year, he comes over. He says hello on the Saturday when he's working. On the Sunday when he comes with his family, he comes over, comes to us then and says, OK, Bo, what have we done well this year? What have we done badly? What do you want us to do? And it really has made a difference. And we've seen in best practice in some of the reserves, some great ideas have come up. Things like, for example, here's a good one, benches. Now, benches don't have a great impact on the environment. You can make them out of three planks of wood. Or you can actually just adapt a fallen tree into something that somebody can sit on. Put one of those every 150 metres, and someone like me can go do a kilometre circuit over the course of a day. Whereas normally I'd maybe walk 100 yards on a good day and think I've got to get back to the car because I'm feeling good. You know, so something like that is great. Small provisions like that, cheap provisions like that can make huge differences. And we're seeing it happening over here. It's not universal. Not even every RSPB site has picked up on it yet. It's always hard to get your message across, and you do find over time you have to keep saying the same thing over and over. But it's worth, you know, you're not flogging a dead horse, you're actually gradually changing perception and you're changing collision that way. So it does work.
I know you arrange international bird watching tours and you travel a fair bit yourself. Are there any destinations or countries you found particularly good for disabled access?
As I say, I think it's different things in different places. I mean, you'd expect the US, with money they put into things, to be the best. And in some places they are. They have some terrific reserves. They put in a lot of voluntary money. This isn't government cash. They're good at raising money themselves, volunteering, that sort of thing. And I've visited some great reserves over there. I also found a responsiveness over there you don't always get everywhere. For example, we went to a place called Aransas, which is where you see the whooping cranes, one of the most, iconic birds in the world, really, that very nearly went extinct and got saved. You have to go up a huge concrete ramp there. It's the equivalent of four flights in order to see these birds. And it's wheelchair friendly. You can wheel up it. So up I went with my mate Brian, got to the top, and he couldn't see over the parapet from his wheelchair. I rang up as soon as I got back home, and I said, look, you know, there's a problem here. The day after, I got an email back saying we put in a wooden ramp. A week later, I got another email saying, we've now made that a concrete one. Your friend would have been able to see over there now. So if you've got that response, and if you've got good provision. But also, as I say, in the middle of Africa, you'll find places that are terrific for wildlife, terrific for people because of the vehicle access. But you've got some great places. I mean, Fog Dam It's a great place. You've got a nice high right in the centre that you can look out over a great wetland and see wonderful birds everywhere. From the comfort, I know from the comfort of a wheelchair, because I've had a friend with me who did that. Townsville Common, there's another great place you can drive into. And other places that aren't reserves, but are the best places in the world for birds, places like Cairns Foreshore, that you could spend eternity there and you'll see different birds every day. Great place, totally accessible because it's, you know, boulevard down the edge of the sea. My favourite, though, New Zealand. A place called Tui Tui Matangi. It's a tiny little island reserve right near the Auckland. Wonderful birds. And it has a boardwalk all the way around the island, benches everywhere. And the cleverest thing in the world, you sit on a bench and the handrail that you would have used to get up the ramp to where the bench is actually hollowed out and full of water. And all the birds come and drink while you're sat there on the bench. Couldn't be better.
That's all very inspiring, Bo. If people want to find out more about Birding for All, where can they go?
Well, we've got a website, birdingforall.com, quite easy to remember. And on there you'll find how you can join if you want to. It's free. We have membership all over the world, although most people, most of the members are over here in the UK, quite a big US chapter, even one or two Australians. If you want to get a hold of me or you want to know more, have a look at my website, fatbirder.com, which has got a page for just about everywhere in the world, every state, every country, all sorts of things birdie, and you'll find there's a form on there you can fill in and it'll get a hold of me. And I'm always happy to answer questions, and anything I can do to help anybody else make things better, I'm all for it.
Bo Bolans, founder and chairman of Birding for All. If you're interested in the birdwatching sites in Australia that Bo recommended, they were Fog Dam Conservation Reserve, about 70 kilometres east of Darwin, Townsville Town Common Regional Park, and the Cairns Foreshore. Bo's websites again are birdingforall.com and fatbirder.com. Membership of Birding for All is free. In Sydney, there's a group working really hard to improve and protect the environment. They're called Bushlink, and they're a team of workers with disability who carry out bush regeneration around Sydney's northern beaches. I spoke to the Bushlink team about their work, and first we'll hear from team leader Kathy Hockey.
Bushlink provides employment for adults with intellectual disability, particularly for those who need support to retain a job. It gives them opportunities to work in bush regeneration, so working outdoors, participating in a lot of community projects. They work with their peers, but also get to work with a wide variety of groups out in the community and the business sector.
So that's something that's very important about Bushlink, isn't it? It's not just about jamming plants in the ground. It's about people working together in the community for the environment.
That's right, yes. It's a double benefit because you're working in the environment, and it's a benefit to our staff because they're mixing in with different people in the community, but it's also a benefit to community members because they're getting to know somebody with a disability, whereas they might not normally get to do that. And people are attracted to working with our group who may not necessarily get out and do bush regeneration if it was just that on its own. So, yeah, we're sort of attracting more people to environmental work.
So who's in the Bushlink team? How many are there of you? What kind of age group and mix of people have you got?
Yeah, they're mostly in their 20s. They come out of a transition to work program. So they go from school to transition to work for 2 years. And then we've employed young adults. So some of them have been with us since 2009 when we started. So they range from sort of 20 up to 27. And we have currently five staff with intellectual disability that we employ, and we have one volunteer with a disability who we're hoping to employ very soon once we get a little bit more money. And we have a support worker, Diane, who takes them out every day, well, 3 days a week, and myself, who's the team leader, and my job is to get the projects going, get the work, get the grants, get the funding, keep them in a job.
So is this a full-time or a part-time job for your staff?
3 days a week Bushlink runs at the moment, and we're, some of them work the whole 3 days and some work 2 days. So it's just because we've got our car fits the support worker, Diane, as the driver, and then it fits for other staff with disability. So that's sort of the maximum that we can have in a group. Yeah, we're full at the moment, but what we're doing is we're fundraising for our own car because we're borrowing a car, and that car that we borrow is only available 3 days a week. So when we have our own car, we'll be able to, as work comes up, work 4 days and 5 days a week and then put on more teams.
So you mentioned going out to sites. Give me a picture of the kind of regeneration work that Bushlink does. Where do you go and how big are some of your projects?
Well, we run quite a few projects, so they're not huge, but we've got bush care contracts at Carrington Parade, which is at Curl Curl in Sydney on the boardwalk right on the cliff. So we do work there about once every fortnight, and that's mostly regeneration work. There's other places that we go, Manly Dam we go to a lot, again in Sydney, with corporate volunteers, and we do a lot of re-vegetation work, so a lot of planting and mulching and clearing there around the picnic areas. And we've also got some contracts in schools. There's some schools that have bushland attached to them, or they have native gardens, and so they've given us contracts. And we work with parent volunteers, so we're sort of encouraging them to come along and work with Bushlink during the day, and then that sort of just encourages that mindset in the school of the parents getting involved and creating a bush care group, but we're sort of supervising them. From a bush regeneration point of view, the most exciting place that we work is Lionel Watts Oval, which has a threatened ecological community, so Duffy's Forest vegetation, and the council are advising us, and we're doing some sort of experimental regeneration techniques. We're raking areas and, you know, creating slight bits of disturbance and using smoke water to encourage seed regermination. Yeah, getting some results there, so that's sort of exciting to watch. So it's definitely a big variety of places, people and types of work that we're doing.
Do you think other businesses or community groups that work on environmental improvement could benefit if they understood, I guess, a business like yours that is inclusive of workers with disability?
Yeah, well, I think that what we've found is that everybody has their strengths, and there are so many different tasks in bush regeneration, so there are a lot of opportunities for people who are interested in doing it. And there are people out there with intellectual or physical disabilities that don't need support. They can independently come along and work at a site. There's a lot of people with disability out there who would like to volunteer, and that they might need support to volunteer, so it would be nice to see in the long term the supported volunteering opportunities for people who want to get out there and do that. Yeah, I just think that it's a really nice environment for people to relax and have fun, and it breaks down barriers between all the groups that work together.
Kathy Hockey, team leader at Bushlink, a not-for-profit whose workers with disability work to protect the environment through bush regeneration. I was also lucky enough to speak to members of the Bushlink team who were on a bit of a break. So next we'll hear from Adrian, Kieran, Natalie and Robbie. And we were speaking on a speakerphone just so everyone could join in. So you might have to listen a bit closely.
Yeah, hello, my name's Adrian.
Do you have a favourite place or garden that you like to go to with Bushlink?
Yeah, I like going to Curl Curl.
What's at Curl Curl?
It's on the headland, so it's a nice view of the ocean.
Yeah, I like have a time and have fun.
Yeah, my name's Kieran.
And what do you do with Bushlink, Kieran?
I work in the bush 2 days a week, and that's about it, I think.
And what do you like about the work that you do?
It's pretty good.
So, have you got a favourite place? Is that Curl Curl as well?
That's Curl Curl as well. Yeah.
Everyone likes Curl Curl. I think I'll have to come.
Yeah, I'm Natalie.
Hi, it's nice to meet you on the radio.
Yeah.
So, what do you do with Bushlink, Natalie?
I love working with my group.
Yeah? Why do you love it so much?
I learn a lot with my bosses.
Everyone loves your bosses, that's great. So, what do you do with Bushlink?
Reading, mulching, doing return.
Oh, is there lots of lantana?
Yeah.
Is that a good plant or a bad plant?
A bad.
So you weed it and you try and get rid of it?
Yeah.
That's good work. Have you got a favourite place that you like to go with Bushlink?
Manly Dam.
Manly Dam. Why do you like that?
It's a good spot.
Yep. Is there anything else you'd like to say about Bushlink, Natalie?
I'm proud of my group working with me.
Yeah, you're proud of them?
Yeah.
Because you all work hard together?
I work extra hard.
Well, good for you. It's good work that you're doing. Thank you for talking to me today.
You're welcome.
Hello?
Hello, is that Robbie?
Yes, it's me.
Hi, Robbie. It's nice to meet you on the radio.
You're welcome.
What do you do with Bushlink, Robbie?
I like mulch.
Yeah, you like mulching? Why is that? Because you're outside?
Yes.
Is it too hot today to do mulching?
No.
Ah, you'll mulch every day?
Yeah.
Have you got a favourite place you like to go with Bushlink?
Maybe Manly Dam.
Manly Dam. Natalie liked that too. Why do you like Manly Dam?
All the animals.
What sort of animals do you see?
Birds.
Is there anything else you'd like to say on the radio about Bushlink?
I like weeds.
You like weeds?
Yeah.
Somebody's got to love weeds.
Yeah.
What's your favourite weed?
My favourite is Asatosa.
Oh.
Asatosa.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
That's a potato.
Looks like a big potato underground, and you have to dig the potatoes out. So they all like digging out the potatoes and see who can get the biggest one.
Yeah.
You sound like a very hard-working crew.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for talking to me, Robbie.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Do you all love Bushlink?
Yes.
And do you like working with schools?
Yes.
Why is that?
I love working in schools because we can teach kids to do it.
Oh, so you're teaching kids to look after the bush?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So you're teachers and you're caring for the environment.
Yeah.
That's really good work. Well, thank you all for talking to me today. Happy Disability Day! Thanks to Kathy, Kieran, Natalie, Robbie and Adrian from Bushlink. If you'd like to find out more about their work, or if you can help out with a donation, their website, including their contact details, is at bushlink.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.